It's time to catch the beat from Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign, and Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. Tonight, I'm airing the second segment of the July 5th panel I recorded at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, the second of four panels called The Summer of Solidarity, spearheaded by Amy Rickman and Loretta Gaffney, local artists and activists. The panel is titled We the People, Advancing Rights and Justice in Champaign-Urbana. The subject is learning about the history and future of Champaign-Urbana organizing from local luminaries. We'll jump in at the first question posed to the panelists and hear from Joshua Gabble of Uniting Pride, Jessica Thornton of the Education Justice Project, and Rebecca Christ of Girl Zone. Following will be the voices of moderators Sam Smith and Amy Rickman, and panelists Avery Sanborn of the King's Guard, the UIUC Kingfisher Mascot Movement, Esther Pat, Champaign-Urbana Tenants Union, Grant Chassie of the Public Eye, Danielle Shenowith of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, Imani Bazell of SisterNet, Jeffrey Trask of the Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition, and Christina Berger of Amazon. The first panel and succeeding segments of this panel will be archived under Catch the Beat on the WEFT website at weft.org under Public Affairs.
To start, please tell us about your local organizer.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me, first and foremost. My name is Joshua Gabble, and I'm the executive director of Uniting Pride. I use any pronouns, so. Yeah, and I just, before I want to dive into Uniting Pride, I do just want to honor the fact that this community has a really, really rich history of queer liberation activist work going back decades and decades and decades. So please go check out some of the incredible strides this community has made for going back to the 70s, truly some incredible activists, many who you probably know and engage with regularly still. But Uniting Pride, you may also notice by the Up Center. We are the queer resource center for not just Champaign and Champaign County, but we are the only queer resource center in all of East Central Illinois. We regularly provide services to over a dozen counties with just a staff of four. We only have paid staff for about 6 years. And we primarily began a community group came together in 2009 to create Champaign-Urbana's first Pride Fest, which was in 2010. Raise your hand if you remember it. Okay, some of us in that fabulous little mall right behind us. Now we've grown to not just being a Pride Fest, but the largest Pride Festival in the state of Illinois outside of Chicago, which we are very proud of. Thank you. But being a full-time resource center for the community, we are primarily in the business of creating spaces for people to gather, to support one another, have almost a dozen support groups. We connect people to community resources, and we have really kind of started to dip our toe more and more into the advocacy sector. Of course, we're 501c3, so unfortunately we are very limited in what we can do sometimes, despite being a queer organization whose identity is inherently politicized. But we engage with Equality Illinois and the ACLU regularly, and work really, really closely with our partners who do have some advocacy space. But the other big piece that I think is really key to what we do and what we really want to do in this community is education. Going to schools, going to churches, going to businesses, and educating people and giving people a baseline to understand the queer community. So I'll leave it there.
Hi, I'm Jessica Thornton. I'm here today on behalf of the Education Justice Project. I think a lot of you guys have known or heard about or even worked with the Education Justice Project over the years. It was started in 2008, and a lot of people know Rebecca Ginsbury as our director and founder. But today I just want to point out that the Education Project was actually started by a group of founders, a lot of which who were in the community here, and helped spearhead and direct where that organization went. And so today I do want to acknowledge that. We love Rebecca, still happy to have Rebecca, but also want to acknowledge that it was a community organization and a community project that started. Currently today, we actually have our Higher Education in Prison program, which I think a lot of people know about, but the Education Project also has a few other arms. And so we have a policy and research team who really focuses on tracking and providing education for bills that are applicable to our population, which is system impacted people. We have a prison to ground program, which really helps system impacted people pursue education upon release. We have our reentry resource program, who makes guides for the Illinois, specifically national, and then for people who are gonna be deported upon release, both in English and in Spanish, which you can talk to Chad over at the table about later. And then last but not least, we do have our education in prison program. And so I think it's important to note that we are trying to tackle the issue, honestly, of our prison system and our injustice system from multiple different angles. Which we'll hear about later today, is like that's super important to not just focus on one aspect, but we kind of need everyone involved on all different aspects, from political to organizing to education, in order to make a really big difference. And I think that it's also just important to talk about my experience. So I'm the academic manager for our college and education program, and I spend a lot of my time inside Danville Correctional Facility, actually with our students and educating them and hearing about their stories. And so I would love to talk about that for hours. So definitely find me afterwards to talk more about that.
My name is Rebecca Christ. I don't belong on this panel. I was a core organizer with Girl Zone, which is an organization that no longer exists. So I can't talk about what's going on with that right now, but I would love to talk about Girl Zone. Girl Zone was an organization dedicated to providing opportunities for girls ages 7 to 16, 6 to 17, somewhere in that range. And we did a ton of workshops on things ranging from zine making to auto repair to cooking to rock instrumentation and music recording. And it was really created by Amy Rickman, and based on a gender equitable pedagogy that she created as part of her work on her PhD program, looking at how the ways that girls are sometimes shortchanged by our education system in minor senses, like we give boys longer opportunities to answer a question than we do to girls, research has indicated, things like that. And I would say that, first off, I come from a fairly conservative working class background. Getting involved in organizations like this is not part of my background work. I just happened to luck into a flyer and emailed it and got involved and was involved in it for many years. I started with a zine making workshop that I facilitated. I did not think I had the skills to do that. I would say that the role of enthusiastically not organized volunteer is a really important role, and that there are a lot of people who don't feel like there's a space for them to launch in that way. And I am here to say there is space, there is a reason. You just have to find a thing that you really care about and then jump in with 2 feet. I'm going to talk a lot more about that later. When I started with Girl Zone, I was really angry. I grew up in seeing a lot of these problems and feeling that there was nothing that I could do about them. And through Girl Zone really did change my life in a lot of ways. And as an adult volunteer, in that it taught me that I could take that anger and put it into a place. Now, Girl Zone was an explicitly feminist organization. The F word is now something that can be divisive. People have feelings about that. And it brings up a lot of questions about when we say we're an organization for girls and women, who's a woman? What does that mean? Who is included and who is excluded? And those are all questions that we have to wrestle with, but I think the thing we do is go back to those core values of saying, I believe that there is no part of society that is less than other parts of the society, and work from there.
So our second question is looking at some myths that we have in society. In the US, we have many damaging myths, and one is a neoliberal myth that pushes the idea that progress only happens by individuals. The same myth says the cowboy is our hero. It says there is a lone hero, an individual makes social change. The same myth is the one that says that rights and justice are advanced by lone heroes. They say that young people alone can right the wrongs of our society and our world on their own, just with effort. That is a myth. These are all myths, and these are all damaging. So I want us to learn from wisdom of organizers. What should locals who want to advance rights and justice know from organizers about how rights and justice really happens? And we'll start here with Joshua and work our way down.
I think this is a great question, and I really want to focus on not getting into the lone savior mode. And capacity, I think, is huge when we're talking about organizing. Capacity and coalition, I think, are so important, especially when you're in an organizing space where you are organizing on behalf of a community that you are also part of that is marginalized. It's really important to find your people and find other community organizers, community organizations to build support, because this is really taxing work. It is some of the most fulfilling work you will ever do, but it's also the most draining work you will ever do. Very much in the do as I say, not as I do category, but you cannot do it all, and that's okay. It's totally okay to not be able to do it all, because there are people who can help pick up that torch and carry it. And I think this community, going back and looking at queer liberatory work in this community in particular, I see that really beautifully represented, where we have torchbearers who have been able to pass it on to the next generation and educate and build more and more capacity and create more and more resources for people to grow. I think also that if you look around, not to, you know, Mr. Rogers you, but find the helpers, look for the helpers, because if you wanna get into this work and you wanna help people and you wanna build a passionate network around lifting up marginalized people, you are going to find other community members more easily than you think. And you're going to find people who are already having the same thoughts and ideas that you want to build on out in that community. So I think capacity and coalition are key from wherever you're starting with. Try and find your people, whether that's organizers or people within your own marginalized identity. You really, really can find support and your base there and grow.
I wholeheartedly agree with the finding your people. When I think about system impacted people and helping them, I initially think about what are the challenges, right? So I think about how this system is built on dependability, transparency, and consistency is what we need in order to overcome it, right? So it's super important for our population that EJP serves, especially in our college and prison program, right? It's a system that does great harm by withholding information and controlling individual schedules, choices, and they do a really good job at like misdirecting, right? Like you have this entire issue where you're like, oh, I want everyone to not think about prisons, right? So you put them out on the outskirts of towns and it's like you don't see them, and so therefore you don't think about them. So that misdirection and untruths is really important to the control in which they hold. In order to counteract this and not become part of that system, then it's important to know what's going on, and it's important to educate yourself. And that means that it's important to demonstrate like the follow through or to explain why it's important to keep going. And so that's something that EJP spends a lot of effort doing, is educating people like, why are we in this space? Why is it important to stay in this space? And honestly, I think it's the most important that we have a responsibility to not uphold the boundaries of the system, right? To respect, we have to go in and we have to respect the rules of the space, but we don't have to further their agenda, right? You have to go in and you have to be respectful to get into the space, but then when you're in the space, you can do things to help the space. And for us, that's like humanizing our students, right? So we have students who constantly talk about how EJP helps them feel human. Like in a space that spends every day trying to knock you down and break you down, EJP comes in and they're able to help humanize you. And so that's something that's important for us. And then the second thing that's really important for us, listening to the voices of our students and our alumni. So every decision that's made throughout EJP involves input from our students and from our alumni.
So what do locals who want to advance rights and justice know about organizing? I've got 5 points. One, you do not need special skills or authority to get involved in this. Two, you do not need permission. No one is going to tell you, it's okay, go ahead and change the status quo. That doesn't come. Number three, just get started. Just figure out what your thing is and start small, do something. Number four, organizing is work. There's a lot of effort. These people on this panel have put in so many hours, but it's also joyful. It helps you develop your own values, decide what's important to you, and in the process, you'll become more coherent in your own view of the world, and you'll hopefully find people that think similarly. Number four, you can't do everything, and focusing on just one thing does not mean that other problems aren't equally important. It just means you're one person with a limited amount of time and a limited capacity to do things. Focusing on girls and women does not mean that I think that boys and men are not important or don't have problems. And lastly, number five, and you might have heard a hint of it in number four, there will be criticism. There should be criticism. And you should consider the criticism as you go through it. If you are talking to people only who think like you, you are never going to develop the larger coalitions that you need, and you're not going to grow.
When Trump 1.0, 2017, I was asked this exact question in emails over and over. I must have gotten 30, 40 emails asking this question. I was also diagnosed with cancer, so I was not in a position to organize to answer it or resist Trump. I needed to survive. So I started a book project, which I did not think would take 7 years, but it is releasing now, and it answers the question, how do you make change in systems? I learned from Malkia Surreal of media justice, analysis before strategy, strategy before tactics. And so what I learned, I worked on an analysis with my co-author that corporations are eclipsing our democracy using logics of superiority, racism, sexism, ableism, the nextism that we don't know yet. And they use media as a justifier and technology as a mechanism for domination. That's an analysis. Strategy, what we offer in the book is the spiral of change. We made it up just so that it would help us think through something. And in the spiral of change, we talk about how it starts with stories and coming together and sharing those stories and beginning to see how our problems are interconnected, and then beginning to root to the bottom of the problems to determine what are the contradictions, the fundamental contradictions. All humans are created equal. These people have to sit on the back of the bus. That's a contradiction, right? And then we take and we work to seed interventions at those sites of contradiction, which we call points of leverage, led by our desires. And I credit the School for Designing a Society, Susan Mark, Herbert Bruhn, and others, Marina, to thinking about how we need to formulate our desires as guiding stars in the work that we're doing. Tactics. The book talks through a lot of local histories. We talk about the history of indie media, CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, Prison Phone Justice, which in our community was started by Sandra Utten here in the front row and continues to this day because we know the fight is never over, right? We think we're done and then we're not done. And so looking at tactics, and I'll leave with this. One of the things I also do is a case study on township. It's really important to coordinate a variety of tactics and to meet direct needs while organizing for change. I learned from Claudia Lenhoff and Champaign County Healthcare Consumers how important it is to connect these two things, and I've worked to bring that to fruition at the township. Thank you.
Yeah, so this lone hero question is interesting. I don't think we'd be here if we had a lone hero. Right. So I think that disproves it, but I think the public eye actually disproves it also. It's a false construction, and our collective organizing effort proves that. We don't have any hierarchy. We make choices through consensus. We don't have a chair or a president or a leader. We come together, we work through our issues, and we put together papers that inform you as best we know how to. And we govern equally. And you can't govern equally if it's just one person. You need multiple voices in a room to make that happen. And it builds community. It makes events like this possible, too. And I want to put a finer point on the public eye's work. Sitting here today, I'm actually younger than the IMC, which is kind of crazy to think about sitting in here. I wouldn't have been old enough to read the issues that were first published, but nonetheless, this group of citizen journalists let me in, and they gave me and the others that have joined since equal governing authority on this paper that we all care about. And that's really putting into practice what's preached when we talk about a lone hero and putting that myth to bed. So it's inclusive. I think our input makes us better. And in capitalist media, we're the exception. It's important that we address the fact that the big name networks are privately owned. Profit is their motive. Truth in your knowledge and what's best of us is automatically secondary if it's that high. And to counter that, we need to have a public media that shapes opinion in our own image, a collective media that embraces understanding and informing and counters the misunderstanding that we've been going into this morning. Our public media here, the public eye, is different. The IMC structure insulates us from those threats that compromise other outlets, and being independent with all of you together as a nonprofit volunteer group, sharing our objectives and our perspective as we see, is really important, and I think it really proves that you need to be together in moments like this. As terrible as things are in some other newspapers right now, the things that we see coming out of the Capitol, being with others and working on this makes it better for us doing it and also produces outcomes that are better.
I think organizing starts with obviously addressing a need. You have a problem that you want to address, transfers into having a purpose, and then transfers into action. And I'll give a little bit of background about the Champaign County Christian Health Center, which is an example of that. It shows how it's not about a lone ranger. So about 20 some odd years ago, we had a situation where our country had about 1/6 of every individual didn't have health insurance. And so there's a group of people who said, that's not right, let's do something about it. And so we started meeting. And every month for about a year and a half, a group of people got together. And by the time we opened up our clinic, 150 people had been part of this effort. So yeah, no lone ranger at all there. And to this day, 21 years later, we're still providing free health care to those without health insurance, medical, dental care, and medications and labs and all that kind of good stuff. So again, this is about having a problem, identifying, having a purpose, and then having the action. And the other thing I'll say is education is so vital in all of this. Kind of going with the healthcare piece, when it comes to reparations, a huge part of it is learning about things in our society. And so the example I'll give you is the Medicaid situation. We have this big, horrible bill that's out there right now that's cutting Medicaid dollars by billions and trillion dollars. And you wonder, like, why would something like that even happen? You know, especially considering that standard Medicaid, 88% of the money goes towards children, people with disabilities, and the elderly. While working age adults only consists of 24% of beneficiaries, they only take about 12% of Medicaid dollars because they're generally healthy people. So why would anyone consider a bill to cut healthcare from children, people with disabilities, and elderly? Well, the underlying understanding is that that's not who's getting benefits from it. It's minorities who are too lazy to work and don't want to get out and get a job, and therefore they're abusing the system. It's that underlying assumption that allows that to get passed. And how can I prove it? Well, there's a work requirement for Medicaid that they're trying to push. So they're trying to say, hey, it's all about not working, so we're gonna put a work requirement in there. And the reality is, truth speaking, statistically speaking, first of all, there's more white people in Medicaid by sheer numbers than black people, all right? And then we consider who actually is benefiting from it, it's these vulnerable populations that are gonna be affected by these cuts. You know, so we really, as a people, all said, who would dare cut healthcare from the elderly, people with disabilities, and children? We were all en masse, that wouldn't even be on the table. But because we don't have education as a community, as a country, these kind of things are allowed to happen. And that's why education is so important in these areas.
So there's two things that I wanted to discuss related to this idea of Lone Ranger and finding community as it relates to the King's Guard and the Kingfisher movement. The first thing is that with whatever organization, whatever movement you're working with, it's important to include those that have been wronged by whatever you're trying to change. So obviously in our instance, it has been very important to us to reconnect with Native communities as well as the Native American House here on campus. I'm very happy to say that our new advocacy director is very passionate about reconnecting with the Native American House, so we can all expect some great things to come out of that. And within some other work that we've done, we've also been able to connect with 7 different Native organizations across the country and receive their support in this fight for a new mascot, for righting the wrongs that have been done by the university and by this community as a whole. And so all of that can be really hard stuff to grapple with. Recognizing when you've been wrong is a really hard thing to do. Some people don't take too kindly to being told that they were in the wrong. And so another thing that I want to point out when it comes to organizing with a group in a community is to find the joy in what you're doing. There will be lots of hard days. Myself and my group included, we've had a lot of hard days and a lot of harsh comments. But by finding the joy in what we do and reminding yourself why you do what you do, that will sustain you for the next day and the day after that. And we also like to remind ourselves that what we're working towards is, of course, these reparations in a way, this righting what has been wrong, but also promoting a big goofy bird that dances, and that there is joy in that. We can bring joy to this community. We have brought joy to this community. And that, yes, reconnecting with that joy in your movement will help continue that movement, help further your cause, and bring a smile to everyone you know.
Yeah. I'm going to say something about individual leaders. A leader cannot accomplish anything if there are no people to follow the leader, which is why it is a myth. But there are many, many good things that have happened that would have never happened had it not been for one person stepping forward to lead. Of course, the message should be that person. For example, from 1989 to 1993, at least five of the seven Urbana City Council members had pledged to support a tenants' rights ordinance. And that's a veto-proof majority. But not one of them would introduce it because the Republican mayor and his staff opposed it. And each of them passed me on to another person, asked so-and-so to do it. And the way we got the ordinance was when one person, Maria Ryan, ran in Ward 2 and came to the tenant union before she even filed her petitions and said, I'm running for our city council. What tenants issues can I address as a council member? And I whipped out a copy of the Chicago Landlord Tenant Ordinance and said, pass this. And she said, okay, she ran on it. We again lined up the people to say they would support it if she introduced it. She won. 3 months after taking office, she introduced it. We got the thing passed. And it would not have happened if there had not been all the people who voted for Maria and all the other candidates because they would support it. And likewise, it wouldn't have worked if there weren't people who showed up to speak for it. Another example, Claudia Lenhoff and the Hope Village. Hope Village is going to provide 30 small one-bedroom houses for medically fragile people who have been impoverished by their medical fragility. And there was a lot of opposition to it. Claudia Lenhoff herself was able to get Carl and the Uvi to each cough up $1 million for this project. But Claudia would be the first to tell you that no way would either of them even taken her seriously if it were not for the thousands of members and donors and volunteers of over 48 years at Healthcare Consumers that gave her the clout to have that pull with people. And so it really is a combo. We need the people to make things happen, but someone among the people has to step up to lead, or all too often, good things just don't happen.
Write this date down in history. It's a day that I amplify a political message from Esther Pat. I say that with affection and respect. No lone hero moves a mountain. At the same time, we do remember the names of individuals like Dolores Huerta and Martin Luther King precisely because the quality of their leadership proved special enough to inspire large groups of people to coalesce and to cooperate in mountain moving. I like to follow effective leaders. They give me confidence that I can anticipate the scope of what's going to be expected of me, that my contribution will be welcome as part of a larger plan, and that I won't unwittingly derail that plan. I've been influenced by the concept of floating hierarchies as articulated by composer Herbert Brunn. Confronting any particular problem, certain individuals in the community will be best positioned to lead in the effort. But as the next problem rolls around, other individuals will be best positioned to lead. And when we are adept at moving in and out of the roles of leader and follower, we recognize one person's empowerment to lead in one particular initiative does not per se equal her abuse of your freedoms and equalities. As I used to say to Amazon, if you choose to come here on Thursday nights, yeah, I'm the boss of you for those 3 hours in the week, but I'm not in charge of anything else in your life. And in the other 165 hours of the week, any of you might end up being the boss of me in some other realm of your strengths.
That wraps up the second segment of the panel, We the People, Advancing Rights and Justice in Champaign, Urbana, part of the Summer of Solidarity offered in July 2025. For the next two Wednesdays on Catch the Beat on WEFT 90.1 FM, I'll be airing the remaining segments of this panel. You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM Community Radio for East Central Illinois, streaming on weft.org, a proud supporter of the Summer of Solidarity. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod. See you next time.